Now, as you've probably heard or concluded, Australia really doesn't have any difficulty in meeting the anticipated growth in demand for electricity and power in all its forms into the future. I mean, our challenge is to do so in an environmentally responsible way. Currently, we generate and use about 45 gigawatts of electricity, and the projections in terms of demand growth out to 2050 is that we have to provide for about 100 gigawatts of electricity. Notwithstanding all the rhetoric and the well-intentioned plans to conserve energy and to drive for greater energy efficiency and design of systems that will put less pressure upon demand, the fact is the demand curve continues to grow because you are all collectively profligate when it comes to using energy and installing more air conditioners and buying more plasma televisions and equipping your second homes up to the standards of your first homes. And as a result, energy utilities are budgeting for decade-long increase in the demand growth for electricity, which we know how to provide. But the challenge, as I said, is what technologies can we introduce that will provide this new capacity cleanly? Now, the inventory of options that are in front of us, in my opinion, will be familiar to us and will be the options that we have now for some decades. We all hope for out-of-the-box, sort of out-of-sight technical innovations, and they may come in the decades ahead. But for the time being, I think what we've got in front of us is what we've got to work with. And when it comes to baseload electricity generation, that means continuing use of coal, gas, oil, perhaps hydroelectric power, although that seems limited in Australia into the future, and nuclear power. Yes, solar and wind, and you'll hear more about that later in the afternoon, we hope will contribute considerably more, as well as geothermal and tidal wave power. There are areas where we should look to major technical advances in order for us to accelerate the move away from, or at least to continue to use fossil fuels as well as accelerate away from fossil fuels while meeting growth in energy demand. Clearly, the installed infrastructure that we use is going to be with us for generations, so anything that we can do to make the burning of fossil fuel and the capture of emission products possible, we would want to do. That extends, obviously, to carbon capture and storage. Finding alternatives to petrol-driven combustion engines is important, arguably probably not within our province to influence greatly, but globally it matters. The design and the commercialisation of batteries and fuel cells for electricity storage and transport will make certain technologies very appealing into the future, which are not so at the moment. Costs and performance in some areas, such as photovoltaic cells, innovations in electricity grid designs, moving from a centralised national electricity grid to perhaps dispersed networks, and also the ability to perhaps introduce long-distance DC transmission in order to be able to exploit geothermal and hydroelectric energy from distant sources, and in Asia, even connecting different countries. Even so, my observation is that even with the urgency that's required by climate change challenges and in some cases energy security, technology shifts in this business occur slowly, and they occur over timetables more like 20 to 50 years rather than 2 to 5 years. And in a way, this was the context for the Prime Minister and the government of a year and a half ago reintroducing nuclear power into the Australian debate as Australia contemplates what sort of energy strategy it should pursue over the next 50 years in order to meet both its demand expectations and its view of environmental responsibility. And in the absence of probably a period of 20 years of any serious engagement by Australians with respect to the nuclear fuel cycle, the task force was put together in the middle of last year, whose mandate was to inform the community and ensure that a debate occurred around nuclear power that was fact-based. We're not an advocacy group. We're in a position to try to assemble data, communicate the experiences of other countries, lay out scenarios, and our metric of success will be whether the debate is lively and whether it is fact-based and not pivoting around views that were formed and solidified in the 60s and the 70s. And I know in this audience we've got people who were part of that effort, both on the task force such as Warwick McKibben, and in supporting the task force such just Kathrolly out there. What do you find about nuclear power when you contemplate its relevance to Australia? Well, when you travel around the world as we do, what do you see? Well, there are 31 countries at the moment that are nuclear powered. There are over 440 nuclear reactors operating, and they're probably complemented by another 150 or so nuclear powered ocean-going vessels, aircraft carriers, submarines, icebreakers. 15% of the world's electricity is nuclear generated, and in Europe it's a little over 30%. So nuclear power is neither a niche technology nor is it unfamiliar. It's fairly conventional and in some areas critically important. And in Australia, if we had the same level of nuclear powered electricity as our OECD colleagues, and that's the community that we benchmark against, then we'd probably have about 10 reactors operating at the moment, largely located on the eastern seaboard. In our part of the world, the following countries already have extensive nuclear power: China, Taiwan, Japan, South Korea, India and Pakistan. And the next two that appear to be in the queue for introducing or commissioning their first nuclear reactor are Indonesia and Vietnam. And the 31 countries that are nuclear powered at the moment look as if they'll be approaching 50 by 2020. So that was the picture that we painted. There are footnotes in terms of the opportunities for nuclear power in Australia, which are important qualifications. Clearly, nuclear power would be more costly to produce in Australia than the power generated by the use of fossil fuels. In Australia, everything is more costly than the use of fossil fuels because we have such large reserves of coal and gas easily accessed with sophisticated infrastructure that works efficiently. But as you've heard, if there is a price applied to carbon, whether it's a carbon tax or an emissions trading scheme, any reasonable level of that price closes the gap between fossil fuels and nuclear in particular, so much so that we were able to form the view that by the time the first nuclear reactor was available in Australia, a nuclear power offered the promise of being the lowest cost, safest, cleanest form of electricity available to Australians in the 2020s. Another qualification which applies to us in many countries that aren't nuclear yet is that after an absence of 20 years of activity, probably be at least 15 years before we could get the first reactor up and running in Australia, once we got the political will and the community support to do so, and we are nowhere near that point at the moment. There is a role for government in the starting up of this industry, not necessarily a financial role, but we could find when we travelled around the world no country that went nuclear without some degree of government involvement, either on the back of a military program for the countries that were involved in nuclear development at the end of the Second World War, or through utilities that were in the main government owned. The review that Warwick and I and others produced a year or so ago painted a scenario. This was not a recommendation. It was one of a number of scenarios, but the scenario was important in order to enable the debate to proceed. And the scenario was that if Australia built its first nuclear reactor in 15 years' time, and then one substantial reactor every year thereafter, 1.6 gigawatts of electricity every year thereafter, which is a fairly fast clip, then by 2050 we might have about 25 reactors in operation, and they would be producing about a third of Australia's electricity demand in 2050. And under those circumstances, the greenhouse gas emissions versus a business as usual projection would be about 18% lower than business as usual. So what does that tell you? Well, it's a nice contribution. There aren't too many other single strategies you could pursue that would give you that quantum of contribution. There are alternatives, but it's good to have. But it's clear that going nuclear does not solve Australia's either energy demand needs alone, or if it adopts aggressive greenhouse gas reduction targets, that alone it can get us there. It clearly can't. And I think it's generally accepted in this forum that a country like Australia, and perhaps most countries, are going to have to have a portfolio of solutions and initiatives and policies in order to meet their various environmental and demand criteria. But it is a valid part of the future of Australia, and we think that therefore it's appropriate for nuclear power to be part or to be actively debated today in order to end up with the right policy outcomes for Australia. Incidentally, if in 2050 we have about a third of our electricity that's nuclear generated, there's probably already about 10 countries today that are in that position. So we'll be far from in the leading group, or not, and certainly not required to do anything terribly pioneering. Now, there are still a substantial list of reservations about nuclear power in Australia. Frankly, every country that is contemplating going nuclear, and as I say, there are probably 20 at the moment, confronts a similar list. Now, I'll give you what's on the list without pausing to reassure you that there are answers to all of these, and there are. We can perhaps address them later on in question time. At the top of the list of reservations are concerns about the management of long-lived, highly radioactive waste and spent fuel from nuclear reactors. Every country that has gone nuclear is currently wrestling with the issue of a repository for spent fuel rods. The technical and engineering designs for such a repository are in place. They are not terribly demanding. The industry is only 50 years old, so the need for a repository is looming around about now as reactors come to the end of their lives. If Australia were to go nuclear with a reactor, in the first reactor in the 2020s, it would need access to a repository around about 2080, and we'd be well down the queue in terms, and therefore benefiting from the experiences of other countries as they build these repositories, which, as I say, are comparatively simple things technically. We just have to find in Australia a place that is geologically stable, dry, and a modest distance away from population centres. That's about 95% of the continent, and it's just one relatively deep hole in the ground surrounded by a featureless fence enclosing an area perhaps a kilometre square. So that's not to diminish the political and the community concerns that would have to be overcome in terms of siting. But just quickly, down the list of reservations, there's radioactive waste, costs of nuclear power, the timelines, 15 years or more, are considered by some to be too long. The location of reactors clearly bothers many people. Issues around proliferation. And proliferation is a risk mainly associated with enrichment and reprocessing of spent fuel rods, neither of which is contemplated in Australia. Concerns about the possibility of a catastrophic accident such as Chernobyl. Issues of insurance, access to water. A nuclear power reactor today uses about the same amount of water as a coal-fired power station of similar output. And then the commercial risks associated with making big investments, $3 billion at a time in a reactor, into a future unknown in terms of the political environment, but around which you would assume we would not have bipartisan support, so there's an element of sovereign risk. As I say, this is a list of reservations confronted by most countries. Most countries that have gone nuclear have overcome these concerns. I believe that in Australia we have convincing answers to all of them. But the debate around nuclear power is comparatively fresh in Australia. We're only a year into it. I think we've come a long way. I think it's still, however, too early to ask Australians to express a strong view or a view around nuclear power until we get another year or two of conversation and interaction sufficient to get this information and data out. So where are we in the state of, in terms of the debate in Australia as I wind up here? As is clear from the earlier parts of this forum, we do have a national consensus on the gravity of climate change. That's important because once you've got that, then policies flow from that, such as what we've not now have, bipartisan support around an emissions trading scheme for greenhouse gas emissions. Once you have an emissions trading framework which leads to the proper costing of emissions, all of a sudden you create the kind of commercial, and providing it can be, the framework can be articulated in a reasonable way and there's confidence in the consistency and the endurability of the policy, that then all of a sudden makes the economics of all other forms of energy, not just nuclear, but solar and wind and geothermal, wave and tidal, etc., become more competitive. We have now bipartisan support at the federal level for increased uranium mining and export. Many of you will know that Australia has nearly 40% of the world's uranium, and that's without a lot of effort in the last 20 years in terms of exploration and mining. And recent upgrades by BHP Billiton and ERA suggest that there's more out there than is currently known. And so therefore bipartisan support for the exploitation of our uranium reserves, which will perhaps underpin accelerated growth of nuclear power around the world, I view to be a very positive development we can make in terms of helping the world make the transition to cleaner non-fossil fuel sources of energy. So we are at that point. The Australian government has indicated that they're going to support further investment in education and skill building to try to overcome the loss of 20 years of investment in undergraduate education, training of nuclear engineers, geophysicists, radiation chemists, etc. And beyond that, they've done some specific things to position us as players in the global R&D effort around next generation nuclear reactors. And finally, Andre, it is clear that the next step in terms of the nuclear debate in Australia does depend on the outcome of the federal election, because the government and the opposition have expressed their policy platforms in contrasting ways. While both the government and the Labor Party agree on the further development of our uranium reserves, were the government to be re-elected, then they will move, I think, expeditiously to put in place a regime to encourage nuclear power. If the Labor Party is elected, their platform is clear. They have no interest in being involved in the nuclear fuel cycle, and so activity in that area will certainly be put in the back burner. My personal view is that eventually all leaders, as they grapple with how we're going to transition from today's circumstances to where people think we need to be in 2050 with respect to greenhouse gases, will conclude that when it comes to baseload electricity generation, not only is nuclear the only option, it will progressively be appreciated as being the best option. Thank you very much.